You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And a good Wednesday morning to you and a happy Cinco de Mayo here on the Early Morning Show. My name is Matt Cole. Be with you till 5:40 before the Fan Morning Show pre-show. Got plenty of things to go over here in the next 35 minutes as the Penguins get back on the horse last night. The Pirates late night action in San Diego. So plenty of things to go over, as well as some other things in the sports world as we always do. Wanted to start off today, though, by just talking about more fallout from the Pittsburgh Steelers and their draft from this weekend. And I'm bringing in a guy from the Draft Network. His name is Ben Solak. And he's a guy, the Draft Network, I mean, they are dedicated solely to doing this kind of thing and breaking things down draft by draft, team by team. And so I caught up with him for just a few minutes yesterday. I want to play this right to begin the show today. Because he's got a thought about one man in particular with the Steelers draft that everybody, it's like a consensus almost pick that this guy is really where the Steelers got their value. They really did great in with this one person. And Ben says, hey, not so fast on this. And he's got some other nuggets to drop in here as well. Ben Solak from the Draft Network to begin the show today.
Ben, all right, let's get to I mean, you can't cover the draft and analyze it without giving out letter grades for it. I mean, that's the standard practice. That's the standard is the standard, as Mike Tomlin would say. But I got to say, you went harder than most people in giving out grades in your grading system. I mean, you're out here handing out Fs. You gave one to the Texans. Nobody gives out Fs, man. But you're bold enough to do that.
I give out one F. I can give out many Fs. No, but it's if it's a grading system, then somebody's got to do badly, man. Somebody's got to fail, unfortunately. You know, you don't get just A, Bs, and Cs usually when you turn these things out. And so, yeah, I try to grade fairly. And the reality is that anybody who followed my draft coverage this year and our draft coach over the Draft Network knows how I feel about these players beforehand, so they'll pretty much know how I feel about classes afterwards. So it's not like I'm making up anything new or anything like that.
No, I respect that you're bold enough to do it. And that being said, you gave the Steelers a D, one of the bottom four or five grades in the league. So why give the Pittsburgh Steelers a D?
So the first thing is that they neglected offensive line, particularly offensive tackle, which was a position in which I thought they needed clear help. They only get round three, round four. You go after Kendra Green and Dan Moore. And frankly, I like Kendra Green as a player, but I expected him to be exclusively a fit for zone teams, teams who prioritize athleticism along the interior. He's lighter. He's quicker. That's what he did at Illinois. So if you want to play him and start him and have him be a penalty replacement, he's got to get his weight up quickly, and he's got to play with a lot more power than we saw him play with at the Big Ten level. And so while I appreciate how talented the player is, I'm worried about the scheme fit in Pittsburgh where they don't really run as much zone. Dan Moore, who's a fine player for multiple seasons for the Aggies, looks a lot more like a long-time backup, more so of a longer arc player, developmental player, and once again, is more of a zone-type body. So again, like maybe these offensive line investments are telling us that Pittsburgh is going to be changing the way they run the ball a little bit and going to be looking at new schemes and trying to borrow from some of these Shanahan-McVay approaches that we've seen proliferated in the league. But as of right now, it's difficult to figure out how these dudes gel with a dude like Zach Banner, who can't be out there blocking zone. He's just far too heavy-footed, far too big. And so I really wanted them to come in and address offensive line, and they didn't. I thought they got a fine player in Najee Harris at 24. There's no doubt that Najee's good at football. But if you want to improve your running game, we've seen historically that you need to improve your offensive line first, and then you deal with the running back position. And that a talented running back can't account for holes in the blocking system. And so while I like their pick of Najee and it makes sense for their philosophy, I'm not sure he's going to give them the boost in the running game that they like. Beyond that, then, I thought the corner depth would be a priority, edge depth would be a priority, and they go Pat Freiermuth in round two. And again, there's nothing really wrong with Freiermuth. I think he's a fine player. I think that this is right about the early edge of where he was going to be drafted. I just don't know with Chase Claypool, Juju Smith-Schuster, and Deontay Johnson all in hand, how many targets there will really be, how many mouths there are to feed in this. So it's clear that they wanted to go heavy on offense, they wanted to add to the weapons, and they wanted to get a final push in here with Ben Roethlisberger. For me, that's not the direction I would have taken this draft. And so I think they got a couple good contributors, and their players will be good stealers over their rookie contract. Did they make a splash large enough to change their fate after a 1-6 end of last season? I'm not too sure about that.
So you say that Kendrick Green is not a fit for this scheme. Offensive line-wise, who would have been there? Would have been, you know, somebody like, especially in that second round, somebody like a Creed Humphrey or a Josh Myers?
Oh, absolutely. I think Creed Humphrey was the one that you expected to be a fit for them, right? Because Creed was running gap power stuff at Oklahoma. He was a puller. He was a down-blocking player. He had some nasty, right? That pouncy vibe of kind of playing in your face and being aggressive. So, sure, that's your second-round pick. If you're looking more at the third round after they picked Green, you know, you had Ben Cleveland available, you had Trey Hill available, both of them coming out of Georgia. Ravens make Ben Cleveland their pick. I want to say 6-7 pick after the Kendrick Green pick. He would have been great. Minnesota traded up right in front of the Steelers to snipe Wyatt Davis out of Ohio State. Was not a big surprise if that was the guy for the Steelers. The Steelers ideally had him on the board and then just went one more spot down their board for Kendrick Green. So there were guys available in the third round who I think could have been starters and would have been better team fits. Again, if they're trying to run more zone, then you're all right. But if they're going to try to make Kendrick Green into pouncy, I think they're going to have a lot of trouble.
Ben Solak of the Draft Network here with me on the early morning show. Ben, I want to ask you about two other picks deeper into this draft. Buddy Johnson, the linebacker from Texas A&M, and Quincy Roche, the edge rusher from Miami. Do either of those guys, maybe both of them, have a chance to be factors here in the future?
Yeah, I said I really wanted them to prioritize edge depth. I didn't think Quincy Roche would fall as far as he did. And so in that they got him in the sixth round, I think they did get good edge depth. This is a player similar in build and in play style to Ola Odunayi, who came out of Toledo, late round pick a couple years ago. Has since moved on. I think he's in Tennessee now, I want to say. Also, a player build, outside pass rusher, has a little bit of length, has a little bit of bend. He's not really going to be a run-down defending player, but he can stand up, wide alignment, drop occasionally in zone, but generally just be an outside pass rusher. So he's going to compete for edge three roles, and I think he's going to bring it on Cassie Smalls, who really, really struggled last season. So I like that Roche pick. Buddy Johnson is a great example of, you know, he's a good developmental player, you know, he's got multiple seasons of starting. He played Mike at 230 pounds, so he's probably a little miscast, but great athleticism. Okay, maybe he'll be a good developmental player. And then he goes to Pittsburgh, who has such great history with later drafted linebackers, with linebackers in general, I should say. Okay, now maybe he actually has a really good chance to develop. You know, this is now a guy who we circled because he landed in a good spot historically for linebackers. And so I do think that you like Buddy Johnson as linebacker depth. The Steelers linebacker room is pretty solid. I think you like what you got out of Bobby Spillane last year when he was forced into that starting role. So Devin Bush, Vince Williams, Robert Spillane, you're happy with your off-ball linebackers right now, but Buddy Johnson does give you some flexibility there, especially if Spillane wants to move on after what he put on film last year. So I like that Buddy Johnson pick for Buddy Johnson, because if he's going to develop, it's a good place to do it.
Are you a drafting a punter in the seventh round guy?
I'm a Presley Harvin guy. He's a hoot and a holler. He's a ton of fun. Big fella, 250-plus punting. He's got that arm cannon as well, so he can run some trick plays for you. Presley Harvin was as fun of a college punter as there was. He's a great personality. You love talking to him. He plays the sack, loves cars. You know what I mean? He's a great dude. Once we get to the seventh round, I mean, if you do have a specialist concern, then it isn't nice to be able to get your guy instead of having to risk undrafted free agency. And punter, you know, a lot of times these undrafted free agents want to stay closer to home, make it cheaper to live. And so I understand securing your dude. could you have gone for developmental wideout or something to take a little more sexy? Probably. But I'm telling you, like, Bradley Harvin is objectively really fun. So, yes, I will excuse it for him and him alone.
Okay, really fun or a guy that can last 10-plus years in the league or both?
I think he can be an NFL punter for sure. I mean, he won the Ray Guy, right, the college award for the best punter in the country. Had good averages, showed strength. Like, he looks like an NFL-caliber punter. The thing with projecting specialists is that it's so confidence-based. So it's really hard to say, 10-plus years in the league. All it takes is one bad hit or one shank in a critical situation and gets in your head and takes you out. Specialists, as every NFL fan knows, you pray you get consistency there, but it is very rare. So I think Brett Harvin's got clear NFL talent. It's a question of, does he stay strong mentally? Does he add to his arsenal of a variety of kicks? And then can you just ride the roller coaster that is punting and kicking in the NFL?
All right, Ben, last one for you. You're also on in conjunction with Bet Online, and so they've got some prop bets and some odds on everything with this rookie class. I want to go to Najee Harris, though. Najee Harris, rushing yards for the 2021 season. The number is set at 975. And then rushing and receiving touchdowns for the 2021 regular season is at 8.5. You take a look at both of those numbers, and where do you go there? You go the over or the under on that?
Yeah, I'm much more likely to go total touchdowns at 8.5. Najee was a really good red zone receiving back for Alabama. He's got unnaturally soft hands for such a big back, 6'2", 215, 220. You like those running back matchups in the short area because usually on goal line defenses, you're not accounting for running back releasing in a route. Throwing the fact that he's so big, and they're probably not going to run rough for as many QB sneaks as they've used to. He's got such good physicality, Najee does, that I imagine they're using the goal line back heavily as well. 975 is healthy for the yardage, so that's a lot. And so I'd much rather take the touchdown total and assume the Steelers are going to use him as Alabama used him. Drive finisher, right? So I think over 8.5 touchdowns, especially getting it with the total receiving and rushing, that makes the most sense to me.
Ben Solak, senior college football analyst with the Draft Network. Ben, thanks for a few minutes this morning. That was great stuff.
Absolutely. You have a good one, man. Take care.
One of the few people that are not all on board the Kendrick Green pick for the Steelers, saying that he doesn't fit the scheme, but also does like Quincy Roche late in the draft and then Buddy Johnson from Texas A&M, and another seventh-round punter guy that's on board with that pick, and especially with Presley Harvin. So interesting stuff there from Ben. Apologies for his connection getting a little hairy there at certain points in that interview. All right, coming up next, the Buccos, late night in San Diego. What were they up to? And one team went into a new venue into a venue for the first time since, they made everybody angry. And then we'll end the show today with what the Penguins did last night, because it was a big-time bounce back against the Philadelphia Flyers. That's all next. It's the Early Morning Show. Pirates were out in San Diego again last night. Started at 10 o'clock after 10 o'clock, and you're up early, so that means you probably missed most, if not all of it. Let's review it.
Time now for While Yins Was Sleeping on Sports Radio 93.7, The Fan.
All right, so before this game began, there was... maybe you saw this before you went to bed last night. There was an injury designation. A man went on the IL, and that man was Gregory Polanco. This officially from the Pirates. This is all the information they gave us. The Pirates have placed Gregory Polanco on the injured list ahead of Tuesday's game against the Padres, period. Infielder, outfielder Hunter Owen, who was on the taxi squad, made the road trip, and he's going to be called up. That was it. Conveniently leaving out very much information on this supposed injury from Gregory Polanco and why he is landing on the IL, which can only lead you to believe that this is a get-your-head-right stint to the IL after a start to the season with 3 home runs, 5 RBIs, and an exactly 200 average for Polanco. And I've said it before, it's just he does not bring anything to the table. There is no part of his game that is plus or is something that you can benefit from. Offensively, he's a 200 average. Okay, maybe he can run into a home run every once in a while, but then defensively as well, he doesn't give you anything because he just can't throw the baseball. And so there is no reason for him to see the field right now. There just isn't. And so I don't know what this IL stint is exactly going to accomplish, but it looks like it was a, hey, you're not playing very good right now, so take some time off kind of IL stint. Otherwise, though, this is how it all ended.
Swinging a fly ball out to left, deep, and caught at the wall by Tom. Tom hauled it in one step shy of the wall in left. And Nola gave it a ride, trying to tie it. And that's how this ball game ends. The Pirates not up the series with a 2-1 win tonight.
Yeah, Rich Rodriguez avoiding a potential disaster there in the ninth inning as he closed it out. And Richard Rodriguez, by the way, his fifth save of the year. He's got 28 straight outs. He's retired the last 28 batters, I guess I should say, Richard Rodriguez, and is still got a sparkling zero ERA on the season through 12 and a third innings pitched. He has been really, really impressive, and you just hope the bottom doesn't fall out here. You know, he's eventually going to give up a run, but you hope that he doesn't completely lose it, especially before they can actually move him to the deadline or even before that if teams come calling. And then the other pitching news from last night, you know, it was a 2-1 ball game. Interesting because Mitch Keller was on the mound and got the start. Check out this line from Keller. 5 2/3, no runs, 2 hits, 2 walks, 5 strikeouts. And those 5 2/3 scoreless innings gets his ERA on the season down to 6.29. I look at those numbers. They're great numbers. I love that start. I want to see that more out of Mitch Keller, but I don't know what to do with that information. What do I do with this start? How am I supposed to feel about it? Because really, you can't feel much about this start, at least in my opinion, until Mitch Keller does this kind of thing for 2-3 starts in a row. Start to build these things up. It can't just be a one-off. And it's not even, you know, going 5 2/3 of scoreless baseball. It's just avoiding complete and total disaster for more than 2 starts in a row before I can even take anything from what Mitch Keller did last night. I like what he said after the game, though. This seems like a good approach for him.
Whole mentality is just screw it, next pitch. And I think I did pretty well with that tonight. When someone got a hit or something like that, I just flushed it and went right after the next guy. Next pitch, didn't really worry about the last one or anything like that. Just kept moving forward.
It's all a mentality thing for Mitch Keller, I think, at this point. We know that he's got the talent, just isn't quite there mentally. Let's see if he can continue along this path, because until he does so, I don't take anything from that start last night. And then also in baseball news, the Astros came to Yankee Stadium for the first time with fans in the stands last night. Astros lost the game 7-3, the first time that the Yankees fans got their hands on the Astros. Well, not physically or literally, but were certainly yelling things and came dressed to the occasion after they believe the Astros screwed them out of the 2017 World Series and potentially a 2019 World Series run as well. USA Today did a takeout piece on it, and they highlighted one fan in particular, and this kind of sums up the night. Came to the stadium wearing an outfit resembling a human trash can and donned a green Oscar the Grouch costume from Sesame Street, a black t-shirt with the name Trastros on it, and a picture of a small trash can underneath and baggy pants saying Scram. And that pretty much tells you all you need to know about how that night went for the Houston Astros. A lot of expletives being chanted as well that you could clearly hear picked up on the TV feed that, of course, I can't play back for you here on the radio. All right, coming up next, Penguins bouncing back in a big way against the Flyers. Where do they stand now as we head down the final stretch of the regular season and into the playoffs? And one team put out a statement that just flat out nailed it. All of those things coming up next. The Early Morning Show is presented by 84 Lumber. Put your positive attitude to work at 84 Lumber and apply at 84lumber.com. Fan Morning Show on the way after this. 7 o'clock, Matt Clement for his weekly appearance. 7:30, it's Ross Tucker, Odyssey Sports NFL Insider. He always brings the hot takes, I guess. Not necessarily hot takes, but the energy. 7:30, Ross Tucker. And then at 8 o'clock, it's Ray Fittipaldo from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. He checks in weekly as well. We'll go over everything draft with him. Talking about, before I get into the Penguins from last night, real quickly, talking about a potential phantom IL stint for Gregory Polanco made me dig into the archives here really quickly. And Jim Colony, back when he actually used to do updates, once had a disastrous update that we put music to.
Pirates came from behind and beat Arizona 5-4. Jeff Locke gave up four runs. Archimedes Caminero was placed on the disabled list because he sucks. This update brought to you by Tap Brick Oven and Porthouse in Greensburg. They certainly got their money's worth here. With updates every 20 minutes, I'm Jim Colony. I am going to go outside and scream. And I am not kidding. On your home for the Pirates and Pitt Panthers, KDKAFM.
Ah, yes. Good times with Jimbo. Might be the case here with Gregory Polanco. I'm not saying, I mean, Pirates aren't saying that. I'm saying it, though. Total reversal of the night before when the Penguins bounced back and destroyed the Flyers 7-3 last night. Kind of expected it. I did, at least. That's what this team has done all season long. When they lose a game they shouldn't, and especially in embarrassing fashion, they come back, taking it as a wake-up slap to the face, and immediately make up for it. And another advantage of, I think, playing the same team twice in a row, by the way, in these little mini-series this year, another chance to go right back at them and avenge yourself against the same team. And they exposed the fake moose in Brian Elliott. Did you see that? Guy with a moose helmet on. Really? Come on. Johan Hedberg has been there, done that a long time ago. Doesn't matter if you're a moose caller. Get out of here with your moose nickname 20 years too late. The weird hate from the Flyers on Mark Friedman continues as well, as he gets immediately challenged to a fight early in the second period on a hard hit against one of his former teammates. Hard hit, but a clean hit, I thought. And gets cross-checked later into the boards after he scored. Something crazy went down there while he was a Philadelphia Flyer, and now he is hated by them. I would love to know the details of what exactly happened with Mark Friedman in Philadelphia, because they take runs at him every time he goes against them. But the Penguins scored the first three goals of this game. It wasn't just limited to Mark Friedman as far as the Flyers getting dirty, and especially when they get down in a game, you know that's when they have a propensity to really go after another team, and especially the Penguins, and they don't necessarily do it all above board. Now, Travis Konecny slew-footed Brian Rust, caused him to leave the game for a while in the second period, and it eventually led to Sidney Crosby and Konecny getting into a little tussle on the ice, both of them wrestling on the ice, and then, you know, there was a moment where Sidney Crosby got the best of him, kind of gave him a little whitewash, a little face wash with the glove, made him know he was there. And that's where a member of ESPN stepped in to stir the pot. Randy Scott on SportsCenter put out a tweet that said, "Hockey Twitter," in all caps, "ban Tom Wilson." And then says, "Saint Sidney Crosby," in retweeted the video or posted the video of Crosby and Konecny going at it. We're trying to make some kind of connection there between what Tom Wilson did and what Sidney Crosby did last night when, you know, Sidney Crosby never threw a punch or dragged a man down by his hair and almost slammed his head off the ice. So real nice comparison there. Even worse, if you read through the comments, and, you know, a tip for all social media, never read the comments. It goes through, if you scroll through it, Scott said that Crosby has a decent history of his own. Whatever that means. Somehow comparing him and Wilson? What? Sid got back to torturing the Flyers, and that was what's most important, I think. In fact, the first line all scored at least 1 point as they played a lot better than they have here recently. They've been coming under fire, or at least some questioning for how they've played of late. And Sidney Crosby talking about that redemption.
Yeah, I don't think anybody was happy with it. I think, it was a response game, I think, for all of us. But I think in particular, our line, it wasn't a good game overall. So we bounced back tonight and got an important 2 points, and we'll look to build off it here.
Yeah, the power play was 2 of 3. Evgeny Malkin still not quite all the way back yet. Still wasn't there in his second game back from injury, and it might take until the playoffs for him to really ramp up and get his game going again. But overall, all is well again for the Penguins. It's now just a standings checking to see who they match up against. Right now, they're back on top of the East, but they do have the Capitals and the Bruins have two games in hand on the Penguins. But they stand with 2 points ahead of Washington and 4 points ahead of Boston as we sit here this morning. So it's, again, it's about seeing where the pieces line up here to see where exactly they're going to fall for the postseason. It doesn't seem like there's any easy way out of the East Division. And just as a continued fallout from the Tom Wilson latest absurdity, the New York Rangers put out an official statement in response to the absolutely laughable $5,000 fine that the Department of Player Safety handed out to him. And yes, it was just $5,000. That's it. They put out an official statement, and the ending to this is what really is the hammer here. This is directly from the New York Rangers. Quote, Wilson's dangerous and reckless actions caused an injury to Artemi Panarin that will prevent him from playing again this season. We view this as a dereliction of duty by NHL head of player safety, George Parros, and believe he is unfit to continue in his current role. End quote. Well done, New York Rangers. They have a history of nailing these official statements, by the way. I remember a few years ago, they were tearing down their roster and admitted to doing so and put out an official statement like this, told their fans, hey, it might be rough for a while. And you're going to see some of your favorite players leave town, but we would appreciate your patience as we rebuild this thing. Very upfront, very honest, exactly what the fans want from their team if they're going to go through a process like that. And they have rebuilt this thing. Right now, they're young, fast, skilled, and they're having a better season than the Flyers. They're 5 points ahead of them in the East standings. And having a former professional goon like George Parros, and that's what he was in the league, having that guy as the head of player safety, Ivy League degree or not, really is one of the biggest oxymorons in sports. Heck, maybe even in life. But the NHL will probably continue to keep him there because why not? Because there are still clearly people who are covering the league, about to cover the league, or played in the league like Ryan Whitney yesterday that even make this a debate and come to Tom Wilson's side. So, no, the league won't move on him until tragedy strikes one of these days. And it will really be a sad and sickening day whenever it does. Let's end the show with this.
It's time for Gone in 40 Seconds. One last 40-second take to send you into the rest of the morning on the Early Morning Show. Sports Radio 93.7, The Fan.
I noticed yesterday on social media that Buddy Johnson, he posted a picture. It was kind of a Photoshop picture. I think the Steelers did it up for him. Basically saying that he's glad to be a part of the Steelers organization, happy to get started. Steelers won't regret taking him. But it was a picture of him in a neck roll. I love the fact that Buddy Johnson is a neck roll guy. That is a look, especially for an inside linebacker like himself, that needs to come back on a full scale in the NFL. The dream is to have a whole unit of inside linebackers, I think, on this team that all have the neck roll. Give me the big spike coming out of the back of the neck. Fan weather brought to you by Sun Chevrolet. Whether you're looking for a great deal on a newer pre-owned vehicle or great service, you'll always find it at Sun Chevy. Today, periods of rain this morning, otherwise cloudy, a high of 56, and then tonight, partly cloudy and colder, and a low of 39. The pre-show, it's next.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.